Welcome to the Trino Community Broadcast.
Hello, everyone.
Boom! That was awesome, Cole.
We have new
band. You made that intro, hey?
Yeah, it actually blends in. We got a little spacey-sounding music. We figured it was time for a little refresh with what our title cards look like on the Trino Community Broadcast. So if you're listening in, maybe watch. You can see the Trino font on the screen, but more importantly, you know, we're just back with another Trino Community Broadcast, Manfred.
Yeah, 62, and of course, Commander Banban is on my side in his spacesuit, so he's ready to roll and, like, drift off into space, but, like, make a successful back down to Earth and no releases and everything happening, so it's going to be super cool. Today, we're going to be talking about a lake house that simply works at Prezi. Everyone knows about Prezi, but we'll talk about all that more. Before that, what are we going to do, Cole?
Well, we've got to recap what's been going on in the world of Trino. Not that many releases, because we've been pumping out broadcast episodes basically every month now, and releases have not been flying off the shelves as of late, but we can catch up with that. And we've also got some fun stuff to announce at the end of the episode, so if you're curious about what else is going on in the Trino community or other events you can attend, stay tuned to the end.
Yeah, and of course...
Thank you to our sponsor, Starburst Data, for helping to make the Trino community broadcast happen.
Exactly, right? Like, we are both working at Starburst and we love doing it, and we are very much involved in the Trino community. It's great to bring cool presentations like Vincenzo and also, of course, events and everything to the community, working with everyone out there. And in that realm, what just happened in the Trino community, Cole?
What did just happen, Manfred? There's a few different things. I'm curious what thing you're referring to specifically.
There's all these things to talk about. You choose.
Okay, let's do our releases real quick. So Trino 451 added support for configuring a proxy for the S3 native file system, so you can now do that if you need that for security reasons. Added a couple new functions. They're very complicated. There's a couple more coming in 452 as well, so stay tuned for that if you're interested in manipulating data in very sophisticated mathematical ways.
Hats off to the implementers. It's like, this is deep stuff.
Yeah, no, I've been looking at these new functions being added. Like, if I was an engineer using Trino, like, I've been in a situation as an engineer where I'm like, dang, I really wish we had an arc cosine function in this code base or in this library. And sometimes they're not there, but in Trino, it's all there, and there's more being added. So you never know when, like, an obscure, hyper-specific math function comes in handy, but... Especially when you're doing like geography related stuff or like trying to calculate the area of something.
It's also interesting. Like, I just talked to someone recently who was like struggling with like migrating from some other SQL engine, and they were missing a few functions that existed there, and they just wrote some of them as SQL routines in Trino. So then they're there and working. So that's pretty easy too, right?
Yeah, there's always ways around it, but I can say from experience, going and implementing arc cosine on your own, it's not very fun, man.
you and me and the two math experts on our shoulders.
You end up reading like white papers from Stanford, and you're down a rabbit hole for a few hours. So when it just exists, you get to save a lot of time and have faith that the people who did this before you did that research and work and legwork all ahead of time. We improve performance of certain queries involving window functions. That's one of those release notes that's a little vague, but if you go check the pull request, you can get into a little more information, which is something I want to encourage people, is if you're ever unsure what we're talking about or a release note sounds unspecific, we link the related issue or pull request on them every time. So you can go see what the engineer who implemented it has to say about it if you want more specific terms or understand exactly what's going on within Trino. We kind of try to filter things down into like a non-technical user-facing explanation. So, you know, explaining exactly what queries can be a mouthful and not mean a whole lot to some people. So we try to simplify.
Also there's more coming on that. We talked to some people at the Trino Contributor Congregation at Trino Fest, and there's some research teams that like managed to like get some significant performance out of queries for Windows functions. We're going to have to get those patches still.
Of course. And there's always more work being done.
Yeah.
Also, tons of Iceberg improvements, more coming in 452 as well. There's been a lot of development on the Iceberg connector with bug fixes, performance improvements, some new features that are not like a huge deal, but like type coercion is getting more robust. And there's a ton of bug fixes as well. So
yeah, the one thing I do want to mention, hats off to the team at Apple and the team at Starburst working together overall on the incremental refresh for materialized views, because that is not easy at all. And this is only for like basic materialized views. The problem with materialized views refreshing automatically is you need to know what changed in the underlying data and how that affects it. And in Twino, obviously, with it supporting crazy many data sources, that's not even always possible at all. So this first incremental refresh approach was really a cool PR that finally made it in. So I'm very happy that that's there now. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think another technically messy one was we allowed you to write or remove values that are inside an array, which is also quite sophisticated. So if you have like a struct data type that is an array, you can actually go in and modify the struct itself as opposed to like just deleting or adding an entire new struct. So that's pretty complicated, but has a lot of value if you're data format is a little messy. It's just more power to you. So really embracing the lakehouse part of it being a lakehouse. There's some other stuff going on though, Manfred, beyond just what's going on in Trino.
Yeah, 452 is absent from notice. We are going to try to get that out today. So you will have to wait until the next Trino community broadcast to find out what's in it, or look at the release notes as usual. But what definitely happened, in fact, happened yesterday in Tokyo, was the Trino Japan meetup. And that was a huge success. You can check out more notes in the general JP Slack channel in Trino Slack. And there were some really interesting presentations. I would love to see some of those slides, to be honest. One of the speakers was Star Poon, who has recently become a sub-project maintainer on Trino Gateway. And is also was yesterday awarded to become a Trino champion from Starburst. So he's going to get a swag pack sent and stuff like that. So he's been doing crazy lots of cool work on Trino/PrestoSQL. He's been around for, I think, like 6 years. He's been very active in Trino Gateway now. So we love his work. And stay in the community, Star. Go, go. Well done. Well deserved.
Yeah, congratulations as well. We love when the community steps up, makes major contributions, and makes Trino better than it could have ever been. That's the joy of being open source, is that you get to crowdsource the work and it makes it better for everyone who uses it. So we're thankful to have a community that's so active and involved. Of course, if you missed Trino Fest, there's a recap blog post up that goes over all of the talks in there. You can skim each individual summary, see if any of these talks speak to you. See Manfred hugging Commander Bun Bun.
Yeah.
Very important.
Our sponsors, obviously, making the event happen, are also very good. And then here you see for each talk, we have the video recording on YouTube with timestamps and stuff. With like notes and stuff a little bit. And importantly, also the slide deck. So if you want to sort of like find out more details, look up some numbers or so, this is super helpful to have.
And we're missing a few slide decks because we're still waiting on approval at the companies that gave those talks, but they may be there one day.
Well, and also if you're watching the video, you essentially see you do the slide deck.
Yeah. For some reason, I actually personally don't understand the allure of downloading the slide deck myself when I can just go watch the talk. But some people really do like having the slide deck offline. So.
Yeah, I'm one of those people, not necessarily offline, but just to like skim through, look up some numbers and stuff. Sometimes that's useful. So
yeah, okay. Final thing, Trino Contributor Congregation recap notes are also available. So if you missed that, you can go hear about
that. Yeah, that was a very long, very good morning discussion with a lot of people where we discussed a lot of things, and definitely worth reading about if you're deep into Trino development and Trino contributions. We also have a new Slack channel there that is just for that. It's the core-dev channel, which is a bit different from the dev channel, because in the dev channel, people ask about like their custom stuff on whatever they want to do, which is like, that's nice and good. But what we are really interested in is like those custom things to become into the Trino project itself. And that's what the core-dev channel is about. So. But I think that's rounds it out what we want to do. So what are we doing now? We're going to say hello to our guest.
Hello. Welcome, Vincenzo.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for the invite.
Well, thank you for joining us. Like, unfortunately, you couldn't make it to Trino Fest because, well, you're like all the way over in Europe and it's a far trip. And unfortunately, it only was event. We should just make it long. Three events, we had like many good presentations. Luckily, you can present to us about what are you presenting about today?
Just a little bit of a quick recap on Prezi Data Platform, of how it is a data lakehouse that simply works and how everyone can build one here for himself. So,
yeah, and so we're doing this in a format that we don't normally do on the Trino Community Broadcast, which is, you know, normally we make it a conversation. But for context, this was originally an accepted talk at Trino Fest. But we wanted to give Vincenzo an opportunity to deliver to the Trino community. And the Trino community broadcast seemed like the next best place to do it. So, Manfred, you and I are actually just going to let Vincenzo take over the reins, take the wheel, and address the Trino community at large as if this were a talk at Trino Fest.
Well, and also we're going to have Q&A later and talk about a lot of stuff. So it's going to be great anyway.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to this. We actually had this on the schedule originally. We thought it was an awesome talk that everyone at Trino Fest would love. It was one of the first few accepted talks even. So we were bummed when it didn't happen, but we're really excited to bring it to you today. And Vincenzo, I think if you're ready, you can just go ahead and take it away from here.
Absolutely. Thank you. Let's get started. So we will talk a little bit about the state of the Prezi Data Platform and what's Prezi, you may ask, but this is a fair question. Prezi is the company and the tool that allows me to build this nice presentation that will show that I will show in a bit. So you will get to see that as well. Is a company that have a long story in the tech space, and we have pretty cool things to show. So let's get started. We will explore the Prezi Data Platform today, the architecture as data lakehouse and why they work for us. We will talk a little bit about what is really a data platform and why we chose the architecture we chose. And we will talk a little bit about all the components that make for a great data platform. A little bit about me first. I'm Vincenzo Cassaro, data engineer at Prezi. Joined 2 years ago in July, so almost my Preziversary. And I'm part of the data infrastructure team. We are a small team, but we do a lot of cool things. Funny thing from me, I'm from Italy, and I get to tell this a lot to all my coworkers. The data platform per se, what is it? Why we need that? When we talk about data platform, we are talking about a combination of services that serve these simple stages: ingestion, storage, processing, and orchestration of said processing. But about what data are we gonna do this? We are talking about user events, so user interaction that perform some event on our services. And we want to have a deep understanding of what our users do and how they interact with our application. So we need to collect this information, and the data platform help us collect and store and manage all of this data and help our data analyst and our business make the best decision out of those data. This is a super high level overview of what the data platform at Prezi looks like. This graph is a bit outdated to be honest, but the core things are there. So we will use this as reference to understand what's going on. So let's talk first about the architecture. When the data platform was created, there was the option to choose between the data warehouse approach and a data lake approach, right? When we talk about the data warehouse, we have this system in which the data storage and the compute are kind of merged, kind of fused together, while on the data lake, we have a clean distinction between the two. So we store our data, and then we have a query engine or something that helps us manage those data later on. They come with advantages and disadvantages, one of which is that the data warehouse may be sometimes a little bit faster because of the way the compute and the storage are close, but the data lake gives a little bit more of freedom. And luckily, we have a third option, which gives the best word of the two, which is the data lake house, in which we have a data lake plus a table API on top of the data that we store in our storage. So it's the best of both worlds. Luckily, our data team decided to go this way when the data platform was created, and we are now really, really happy. So let's deep dive a little bit on all the stages of this user events journey. And let's start by the step zero, which is the definition. At Prezi, we don't simply collect user interaction that everyone can define. But we have a strict rule on the events definition. This allows us to have several benefits, right? The first one is that there is kind of no duplicate between the events, and there is no strange overlap between things. We have type safety because we generate the client library out of the schema that we defined. So this helps us have a data quality built in inside the platform per se. When we talk about this definition stage, we talk about several components. Log management is a non-made tool, which is the one that define the schema of the event that's gonna be created. And we store this information in a schema registry, which is a standard tool from the community, which we use. And then out of those schema registry schemas, we generate automatically a front-end library that have, again, type safety. And so we control end-to-end that the data we receive are good. After this, there is the first entrance inside the data platform, which is the ingestion. We ingest those data in a streaming way since a couple of months ago. We use, again, different tool, a couple of which are from open source project, other are homemade. Keep in mind that Prezi has a long history, and a lot of our needs were satisfied by homemade software because there wasn't an industry, a market for that. So we, the data team of the time, had to come up with their solution. So let's talk a little bit about them. The first touch point is Bandar Logger, which is a Go microservice that accept the HTTP request from the front-end client and store them in the local storage. Very close to Bandar Logger, there is FileBit, which has the responsibility to read from the local storage in which Bandar Logger saved the file and send it to Logstash. We did this, again, the data team did this because of the approach we wanted to have on the data platform. And this is that each element should keep the data the least amount of time possible and give it as soon as possible. So it was an idea at the time to create this kind of queue with the file system inside Bandar Logger that can help us that create a buffer in a sense. So it's it help us in, for example, when a file bit have a problem or something like that. The second piece is Logstash. Logstash is again an open source project, which we use for several purposes. The first one, and the most important, I will say, is to send data to Kafka, which is the default standard for streaming data from one point to another. In the meanwhile, Logstash is also responsible to read the schema from the schema registry and compare it to the data that we are ingesting to prove and to control that the data is valid. Otherwise, it will be sent to a dead letter queue. And then we have Kafka, which we all know, and Kafka Connect, which we use to store data from Kafka to S3. Some recent changes that we did on this part of the infrastructure is that we moved away a little bit from on-premise thing, because we used to have a Kafka cluster that ran on EC2 instances, which was a little bit of a pain to maintain. And we migrated to MSK, which have served us pretty well since when we migrated. Also, we used to have this Goblin project running on our infrastructure, which is a project that was supposed to run some of the sync from Kafka to S3 in a batch or maker batch manner. We had some problems with Goblin, and we decided ultimately to move away from it and implement Spark jobs instead. To dive a little bit on the Kafka side and give you a little bit of a sense of what we are talking about when we talk about the sides at which Prezi operate, we have a Kafka cluster, an MSK Kafka cluster composed of 16 brokers, and we ship 1.5 terabytes of data per day, and we have around 3,600 tables. This is because, this is an interesting part, because what we do is that when a new event is created, again, how we said before, we create an entry in the schema registry, and at the same time, we create a new topic on Kafka. So every event has its own schema stored in the schema registry and has its own topic. So we have a neat distinction and a neat division between the topics and the events. The second part of the flow of the data in the data platform and the Prezi data platform is the storage. We are, and if it was not clear enough, I didn't say it when talking about Kafka. If it's not clear, we are Eevee AWS users. MSK, in fact, is the managed service that AWS offer for Kafka. And our storage as well is the very popular S3 storage option offered by AWS. We store our data in Parquet, and we build Hive table on top of those data. One of the change that we did recently is that we migrated from the built-in Hive Metastore to Glue, which has served us pretty well. And we also use Glue for their crawlers. because of when we land data on S3, we need to update the partition on Hive and the glue crawlers does just that. So we have fresh data as soon as the crawler run. One of the future mission that we have and the data infrastructure team is to actually switch to Iceberg. I'm gonna say we are fan of the project and we have been following it for a while, and we are committed to switching to Iceberg because we think that all the metadata that we will store will help us improve a lot our queries. We have started some POC, but nothing serious yet. The third part, probably the most important for today, is the part of the processing. After we collect and store all of this data, we have to do something with them, right? And in this data lakehouse architecture, we say the processing is separate from the storage. And to process our data, we use actually two different engines. The first one is Spark. We all know and love it, but we used for a portion of our processing. And the second one is, of course, Trino. One of the recent changes that we did is migrating to Spark 3.5. It was a nice switch to the EMR 7.0. EMR is, the again, the service that AWS offer for Spark. And we are going to look in the future at more scalability and more SaaS solution. We are thinking about, for example, doing serverless EMR or something like that, but that's a long shot. But most importantly, I'm going to talk about Trino. Trino is central in our infrastructure because it's connected to a lot of the pieces that that we have there. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Trino is the linking piece between, again, Hive, which is what store our tables on top of the Parquet file stored on S3, and also around 25 of our database that our microservices work with. And we use Trino to query the data of Hive and RDS from a multitude of services. I'm gonna talk about DataGrip or Zeppelin, which we use, Dagster as well, which is our orchestrator. Well, we are gonna talk a little bit more about it in the next piece. And also we use Trino to connect, to query data from Mode, which allow to create a shareable dashboard, and with Mitsu, which is our new entry in the data platform. I know you guys had Istvan here in this Trino community broadcast a couple of episodes ago. So Istvan, if you are watching, we have worked closely with him in the past couple of months, and we are very satisfied with what they have to offer. We use it to run Trino on a cluster we maintained, formed by 10 EC2 instances, and we are in the progress of moving to Galaxy. So far, it's been a great experience. The last part of a good data lakehouse, good data platform that simply work, is the orchestration part. Of course, we have all this data and we have all this processing power and we have tables, but it's gonna be a mess if we don't know exactly what to run when. So that's why an orchestration tool, an orchestrator, is a fundamental piece of every data platform. And to do this job, we use Dagster, which has proven to be a great tool for what we do. As you can see, is one of the most linked rectangle in this schema, and this means that it's connected to almost everything. And with Dagster, we schedule how often our assets, our table are refreshed. We schedule our daily job, our compactions, and everything is run basically via Dagster, which interacts, as you can see, with Spark for the heavier jobs, for Trino as well. We have this nice integration with the Trino Python SDK, and we run very nicely SQL queries from there. So it's been nice so far. One of the things we would like to do is to become more flow keeperless. Flow keeper for you may be a news, not known, because it is a non-made product as well. It was an orchestrator that we built in-house, the data team built in-house when there wasn't one available at the time. We are migrating completely from it, from the left traces of it, to a complete pure Dagster. We are almost done. And also there as well, we want to go maybe on an hybrid SaaS, because we are hosting Dagster at the moment. We are deploying it. But there are options there as well to have a hybrid approach, and we are going to expect that as well. So this will wrap up what are the main components of the Prezi Data Platform. I think it was a good show, a good opportunity to show how combining a couple of significant pieces of open source, mainly projects, can be a good data platform, and it is a good one for Prezi. Prezi have a user base of 160 million users, and we have something like 1 million monthly visit to our homepage. So I want to stress the scale of Prezi, which is not the hyperscale of Facebook, of Google, right? But it has a critical mass that make our decisions go this way. So to sum this up, Prezi Data Platform is founded again on this state-of-the-art, stable, open source, mostly tech and architecture decisions. It allowed us easily in the past couple of months to try out new things without breaking everything, and its modularity and pluggability can be obtained using like what I described. And as you can see, it's constantly evolving, and we are always on the lookout for nice new things to try it out. That was it. This is Vincenzo for Trino Community Broadcast 62.
Hello, thank you very much for the talk.
Thank you.
That would have been right at home at Trino Fest. Really enlightening, and good to hear another story of how Trino is making life easier for data teams around the world.
Yep. Pretty much, yeah. It's been a reliable tool to work with.
So how'd you find it in the first place? What was the original motivation to deploy Trino as part of your stack?
So Trino was already a tech user in Prezi when I joined. So it was not my call to use it, but I'm glad they were using it. I was exposed to Trino some years before I joined Prezi, so I had a little bit of a sense of what was going on. And so, yeah, it's a pleasure working with it.
That's awesome. So when talking about Trino, one of the questions I had is you mentioned that you're running Trino on EMR. You're also running Spark on EMR. Is that correct?
We run Spark on EMR. We don't run Trino on EMR. Okay. We used to run it on 10 EC2 instance that we managed, but was not on EMR. And now we are migrating over to Galaxy.
Okay, Starburst Galaxy. Okay, cool. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Because I was wondering what version you're on. Obviously, with Starburst Galaxy, that question is like, well, the latest.
Yeah,
basically. So that becomes much easier to deal with. So that's really cool. Well, you mentioned before that Trino has been a long and stable tool. I want to put my heads up to the Prezi users and community out there. It's also a long, stable tool. When I typed the URL to put it into my browser to find it, command completed to a presentation from a friend of mine from, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. And the presentation was like a flashback seeing it. Totally works perfectly fine. It's quite amazing how deep and large the ecosystem of users is, right?
Yeah. We now have a history of 15 years, basically, right? Prezi started in 2009, if my memory don't fail me. And in this long period of time, we collected a good amount of Prezi, and knowing that some of the older ones still work is a pleasure to hear.
Yeah, it's quite fun.
I was explaining before the broadcast that I learned of it in eighth grade. So I was 13 or 14 years old, and I'm 27 now. So I've been along for the ride with Prezi. did we mention that this presentation was in Prezi?
Oh, this presentation was in Prezi. Yeah, I think I mentioned it in the at the beginning. If you saw some crazy cool animations going on, yes, that was definitely a Prezi made presentation. And let me plug in here about you all findings about old Prezi and how you discovered it. It's a common thing, right? It's a common thing to talk with people and that knows Prezi from school time, and they kind of rediscover now and understand that it's still going on and still working. This is very important for us to let everyone know that Prezi is very much alive and pretty much evolving. We, as pretty much everyone nowadays, are implementing crazy cool stuff with AI to create presentations in no time. So it's very good to hear that people are rediscovering and reusing Prezi.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So back to the tech stack though. This was just a question. So it's you mentioned Trino is connecting to kind of your main data lake where you have all this data, but also to a couple dozen microservices.
Yes.
Is that using connector base? Are there various connectors for these microservices, or do they all store their data in one central location?
We, if I said that, apology. We are not connecting directly to microservices, but we are connecting to the databases that the microservices work with, right? Where they store data and so on. So
yeah,
we are using the data produced by the microservices in the
what that data stored in though? What databases are those? Are also all on Hive and S3 or?
Oh, they are regular MySQL databases, right? Postgres or something like that. And we store what the microservices need to operate, right? Like logins and whatever, presi creation or stuff like that. Like it's the OLTP, I'm going to say, right?
So relational production databases powering a platform, and then Trino can plug right in. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. I can put it all together. On the other hand, I also had a question. I saw like you were using like a whole bunch of client tools like Mode. I love how you plugged Mitsu and Istvan's work. Like I was very impressed with that tool, and I'm glad that you maybe even found him via us. Like it was quite amazing. Like the presentation was very interesting, and like it seems like a cool tool and seems to work really well with Trino. So that's, I think, really cool. What are some of the things that you are, like what's in the data and what sort of reports are you generating? Obviously with Mitsu, you're probably doing analytics of how the users are using Prezi and what's working and not and that kind of stuff. But what are some other reports that like, or dashboards or whatever you're creating with Mode and those other tools?
So I'm going to give you two examples, one for Mode and one for Mitsu. The one of the things we do with Mitsu is like the funnels, and like we know the people that go to the home page, the people that sign in or register, the people that creates the first Prezi, and so we have all that journey of the users and what they're gonna do. That's one of the main usage of Mitsu. While for Mode, we have something different, I'm gonna say, one of which is, for example, an IB test dashboard to see how our IB tests are going on and what we should promote to production and whatnot, stuff like that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, very nice. It's a typical thing to like have all these things, but it's, I love to see the Mitsu is in the mix as well. So that's really interesting. Another tech question. What's that Banda logger and Filebeat stuff? Are those like projects you have and are they open source, or what are those? Like I saw how you, like you talked about them a little bit, but you didn't mention what the background of these problems are.
So Banda logger is an homemade project. It's a Go microservice that accept HTTP requests and save them as JSON on the local storage, basically.
But it's a home-based thingy.
Yeah. It's homemade. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All
right. While Filebeat is an open source project, which is a very fast proxy, I'm going to say, and it reads from the file system and quickly send it to Logstash, where we do the schema validation and stuff like that.
Cool. Another trend I observed is you mentioned that you moved Trino to Starburst Galaxy, which obviously makes sense in because that like removes the burden to maintain the Trino version, handle the upgrades and all that kind of stuff. That's cool. You also mentioned that you used to run a Kafka cluster and then moved to something called MSK. I'm not a Kafka guy, so I don't know what that is. So I'm guessing it's like a hosted Kafka service, but can you explain a bit more?
Absolutely. It's exactly what you said. It's a managed service from AWS, a managed Kafka. And it really freed us from the burden of maintaining six Kafka nodes plus 5 Zookeeper nodes, which were painful to maintain.
Everyone loves the open source projects, but everyone always finds out that actually it's great to innovate and work and collaborate them, but like running them is sometimes not that great.
Managed streaming for Kafka is what MSK stands for, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Managed streaming, yeah. Something.
Yeah, sorry, I'm showing off my ignorance. There's just too many tools, man.
Yeah, and you've heard so many three-letter acronyms in your time that it's like they start to clash with each other, you know?
Yeah, I just know FSK, and that's fine. It's just a check, right? Okay, I have one more question that came to me during the talk, and that was you obviously talked about Spark being used as well, and then also we concentrated on Trino, but can you maybe discuss a bit what the different workloads and differences are in interacting with these two projects and what they do differently, what they bring to the table, so to speak? Because like maybe you could run just Trino or just Spark, I don't know. Like, so how's the distribution there?
So in an ideal world for us, we will run all the scheduled job from Dagster, for example, in Spark, and just leave Trino for handling with the external service like Mod and Mitsu. That will be an easy approach, for us, given that we can't mix and match the two. For example, we can connect Mitsu with Spark, or it will be way too difficult. So that what will be ideal. And we do both at the moment, just because when we add the 10 node, Trino cluster, some of our workload couldn't run then, while Spark in on EMR that auto scale to like hundreds of workers and stuff like that can easily take on that job, which are not the major part, because we the vast majority can run on Trino, but when we have those big loads, we need the big gun, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, you could scale Trino to run it as well, but that's probably like operationally harder and potentially... Like, is there some different tooling that you require, like different like SQL statements or like in your pipeline or integration with Python or so that like prevent that potential with Trino?
We run Spark in Python, so we use all our Python knowledge when we run that, yeah.
Okay, so that's the integration then, mostly. That's cool. That's good to know. Maybe we'll have to improve that on Trino, right?
Maybe.
That's awesome. Cool. Cole, you have another question?
I think I'm all out of questions, Manfred.
All right. Well, I think we're good. Vincenzo, it was a pleasure to talk to you. I'm sure the audience loved it. And lots of interesting and great insights. I hope that you'll manage to a migration to Iceberg soon and we can help you there. I'm sure there's benefits waiting for you, and the Trino releases are pumping up more and more features for Iceberg as well. So exciting times ahead, I'm sure.
Yep, loving it.
Yeah, thank you very much for making the time to join us on the Trino Community Broadcast. We really appreciate it. Really glad we got the time for this presentation to reach the Trino community. I think there was a lot to gain and learn from it. So
thank you for having me.
All right, and we have a couple more things to talk about. So we'll say bye to Vincenzo and bring back up our rounding out, because Manfred, there's a few more things to talk about.
Yeah.
You and I clicked that at the exact same time, and it made me, I canceled it because you beat me by like a quarter of a second.
Oh, you're happy. we love our new branding, right? Look, what can we say?
We're excited. So Trino Summit, Manfred, it's already in the works.
Yeah, we're gonna get this blog post live today, I think, or tomorrow latest. Basically, registration has been open for a while. We're looking for sponsors, we're looking for speakers. The dates are set to the 11th and 12th of December. It's gonna be two virtual days, so super easy to attend for everyone, you know, pick and choose. But make sure you register so you get the notifications of what's coming, and like also afterwards, and you can join us live for chat with the speakers and all that kind of stuff. So stay tuned for the blog post and announcements to pop up on Trino Slack and the Trino website.
Yeah, and if you have a talk that you want to give similar to Vincenzo's or anything else related to Trino, make sure to submit one. We'll be publishing a like formal announcement of call for speakers on the website later today. But you can just click that link and the call for speakers link will be inside it. So please let us know. Please submit. It's a virtual two-day event, so regardless of where you are in the world, it should be pretty easy to give your talk, and you'll reach a pretty wide audience. You know, the Trino events tend to get decent views on YouTube, so, you know, if you ever wanted to give a talk in front of 1,000 people on a delay as they catch up and watch your video, it's a great opportunity to do that and become better immersed in the Trino community. There's also a contributor call, Manfred.
Yes, on the 25th of July is our next Trino Contributor Call, which is the virtual version of the Contributor Congregation that we saw the show notes, the notes earlier. discussion on what's going on in the Trino community. There's always something happening around specific PRs, work on different projects like the new Project Swift to improve the performance of the client protocols and all that kind of stuff. So if you have anything specifically that you want to collaborate with us or have questions, let us know. Also, stay tuned. There's going to be a couple more improvements and advancements coming on that sort of front for contributors and maintainers in the near future.
And then we've also got another community broadcast in just a few weeks as well, yeah?
Yeah, on the 1st of August. I kind of am talking to like four different people, so it's going to be like who wins the race to present. So always exciting to see these great presentations on the Trino community broadcast. And also I love the fact that we can like even connect some Trino users to other Trino users like Vincenzo Proof today about finding out about Mitsu, or at least like developing a relationship and see the good evidence. Like that was, I think, really cool.
Well, I think that's about it from us. So thank you to everyone who tuned in and watched all the way to the end. We're looking forward to seeing you in future episodes, seeing you at Trino Summit later this year. Keep an eye on Trino Slack, Trino website for announcements and updates pertaining to all of these things. But for us here at the Trino community, I think that's it. So have a good one.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Trino community broadcast, brought to you by Starburst Data.